Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 51. On this episode, we are setting our sights on American Sniper. And to help me do that are my brothers in arms, Elijah Lovejoy and Wade Bearden. American Sniper is a film that has been incredibly successful. It has been number one at the box office for about a month, with not really a lot of competition when it comes to making the amount of money that it's made. It's also been nominated for a couple Academy Awards, Best Picture, Bradley Cooper for Best Actor, and it deals with the most deadly sniper in American history, Chris Kyle. So we're naturally going to jump into lots of the controversy surrounding Chris Kyle's life. We get into, just the backfighting, the impact this movie has made, the left versus right, conservative versus liberal, patriot versus peacemaker, and just kind of see where that conflict is coming from. So with that, we also get to dive into, where is God in Chris Kyle's story? I mean, there's lots of talk about God, family, country. Does that actually enter into the movie? What did we get from the movie? What impacted us? What left us wanting more or being curious about Chris Kyle's life after seeing the film? You know, did audiences miss some of the nuances in the film? Because, you know, is that one of the reasons that we're having, you know, this film is causing such a stir? Does Clint Eastwood do Kyle's story justice? So there's plenty to talk about. I think we talk longer than we've ever talked about any movie. So I hope you stick through it all. It's a really great conversation. And here it is, episode 51, American Sniper and Missing the Mark. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. Now, how do I frame the story? Okay, so we walked out of an American Sniper. We went to see it really late at night with me and Laura went with Elijah. Almost randomly. And okay. When we walked out, I remember I was kind of taken aback because I almost wanted to talk about it, but it was so late. I think it was almost 1 o'clock in the morning when we got out. We
talked a little bit in the parking lot, yeah.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit. But the funny thing is that I was like, okay, obviously we're probably going to have to talk about this on the podcast. the most ironic thing to me was Elijah, not a week before maybe, told me that his schedule was so busy that he was not going to be able to be on the podcast anymore probably till really late spring, maybe even early summer. Mm-hmm.
I told you that same thing as well.
Yeah, you're like, hey man, these are the movies I'm interested in, but honestly, you know, I've got this big paper to write and you've got a couple more things coming down the pipe. So, you know, don't schedule me for anything, you know, in the next month or two at least. And I was like, I'm totally fine with that. So we walk out of that theater and Elijah's like, "Oh, I'd be very interested in talking about this on the podcast." I was like, "But Elijah, you just told me the thing." And he was like, yeah, sure, I'll find time for it. And then, of course, like, you know, I post that thing on Facebook, and the next day, you're like, da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, okay, so basically the two people that told me not to schedule them for, you know, months and months and months are like, we're in. We're bought in.
Yeah.
I wasn't planning on and actually seeing it, and it just worked out. It worked out to where I was able to go on the Sunday afternoon after it made the wide release. And so that was kind of the big thing. So when I saw it, I was like, let's do this. Let's talk about this. And then it just blew up, right? I mean, there are think pieces everywhere about this film on both sides. And now I believe it's been at the box office for 3 weekends. It doesn't have much competition. So, but it's become a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the time that we record this, it has been there for 3 weeks, and it's won
3 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. Now, given like you pointed out, Wade, it doesn't have a ton of competition, or at least quality competition. I mean, it's got some niche films, some things that typically do more money than people would expect them to for a January release. And honestly, there's lots of movies going back into the theater, Oscar release movies. I know a couple of places around here started showing Birdman again. Selma is still technically in the theater, though not doing incredibly well at all. And actually, we talked about that on the last episode of the show. So it was interesting to me that you go funny that you go see it on like a Sunday afternoon, a nice little, you know, easy, low committal Sunday afternoon movie, you know, just nice
laid
and relaxing.
Back, relax, and just wanted to relax a little bit. So let's just go see American Sniper before the busy work week begins.
You know, so. I feel like it's kind of significant that we're doing this at Zero Dark 30 at night. That we're in an undisclosed location, that I have camouflage on my face, and I feel ready to go for this. No, that's not all true, but it is late at night, which is cool for a sniper movie. Well, I've been making sniper jokes for weeks now with Mikey. Every time I see Mikey, I make a sniper joke.
I mean, Elijah has been it's funny because I usually only get non-reserved Elijah in very, very specific circumstances. Like, Elijah is the epitome of, like, cool, calm, and collected most of the time. So, unless, I guess he's, like, deep in the throes of a basketball game, or you finally get him on that one topic about a movie that's just hits that button, I usually get a very straightforward Elijah. But every time I've seen him, he's been so excited to talk about this movie. I felt like not having him on would be some kind of crime. And I think
it
that
would hurt your friendship.
It would hurt lots of people's friendships because I mean I'm assuming that he would just have to talk to his wife about it, and and she would come and be like, "I need you to fix this. I don't want Elijah to talk about this much. Let him get it out of his system."
I think we should go ahead and title this podcast "Legend." Can we just call this "Legend"? American Sniper Legend Podcast.
So there's so much going around. There was so much visceral reaction when this film came out that Elijah saw our Facebook kind of back and forth, and he knew you were from Texas. There was maybe some assumption. So I was wondering if you could can you on a scale of one to full Texas, can you to someone who's never met you, describe how Texas you are, you know? Because I think someone I think someone who's 100% Texas, like, this is the movie they watch every morning before they go to work. Yeah. You know?
Well, and to fill in the details of that a little more, the Facebook post he's referring to is where Mikey posted some reservations. I don't remember his exact post, and then I saw your response was, "Oh man, I couldn't disagree more." So that's what I'm playing off of in thinking that you liked it.
Here's the thing: I am probably the least Texas person. I say the word "y'all," probably just because I'm lazy and I don't want to say "you all." Mm-hmm. But I've never been hunting. I rode a horse one time, and that was it was this touristy horse riding thing my wife got on one of those coupon sites. I've never caught a fish. I don't own anything. We had a camo day at our church, and I didn't have anything camo. So if that gives you a good picture, I feel
I'm heartbroken. I'm heartbroken.
I love to, but you know what? Here's the thing. I love to be ironically like really pro Texas. So I'll tell people all the time, I'll be like, "Man, I was like, you see, there's only one star in a Texas flag, because that's all we need, right?" And I'll be like, "Secession, like, let's just secede." Like, but no, I just do that. No, but I'm not a very good Texan. I love Texas though. I mean, it's a great place to be. It really is. But it's different. It's different from what you normally think. So maybe that will help you, because I am pro American Sniper, I guess. Maybe.
Yeah.
So maybe that will help you. You're not just like, "Oh, it's because he's from Texas."
No, like, Elijah was excited. Elijah's super excited because Elijah's what I like to call a pot stirrer.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he comes in and just like he comes in and he hears two people talking and he just snipes little shots in there, and then like runs away. Yeah. And sits back and watches.
I will disclose this. I used to live in Dallas, and where I lived about 10 minutes away from where Chris Kyle lived. So I will say that. But I don't know. I haven't read his book. I don't think that affects my judgment of the film. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that, just so everybody knows that.
No, I understand that. And I mean, the reason I'm so excited about this podcast is because I do think it struck a chord culturally, and I'm excited to talk about what chord has it struck. But also, like, conflict is kind of I get an adrenaline rush during conflict where other people get scared. Okay. And so as soon as I saw y'all's Facebook post, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. I hope they're both on. And I see myself as being kind of the referee here, but I'm probably going to just jump in the conflict. I'm glad you liked it.
I'm worried that we're building this up and it's going to be like super tame and super chill.
I'm not worried at all. I'm not worried at all.
I disagree with you. But I still love you. You know, like, I don't know.
I'm not worried at all.
One love, brother. One love.
Yeah. Wait till Mikey gets going. I'm not worried at all.
No. Well, actually, Well, as always, I told Elijah, I was like, usually with these podcasts, I try to bring on people who are much smarter and much more articulate than I am to hopefully just answer the questions that the movie raised. So hopefully Wade and I, it won't come to fisticuffs, but we'll see.
Well, that's why I'm podcasting here. I'm not with you guys.
Yes.
Because y'all can't hurt me.
Yeah, you go.
So
but you're from Texas, so you could hurt us because
let everybody believe that. Let's let everybody believe that lie.
Well, so American Sniper. I guess I do assume that if you're listening to this podcast. And I also assume by the box office numbers that if you're listening to this, you've probably seen the movie because a ridiculous amount of people have seen this movie and or a few people have seen it a ridiculous amount of times, which I would not doubt that either. But
there's very few people. They've just seen it like a lot. And that's why it's making so money.
Well, and that's the thing, because I think a lot of people have gone to see this repeatedly. And I think like that hits on what Elijah's already mentioned. It's striking a chord. And I think it's well worth considering what chord that is. And almost any time a movie strikes something this deeply into our culture, it's like Noah last year. You know, did it necessarily deserve all the attention that it got? I mean, some people really liked it, some people were against it, but the conversation that happened after it, it had cultural penetration. Mm-hmm. So this movie, whether you think that it's worthy of being nominated for Oscars, or you think that it's just a nice modern warfare flick, or a subdued family drama, like wherever you land on that scale, outside of that, like there's an extraction, and that extraction is that conversation that's happening, and people basically yelling at each other on Facebook and Twitter and wherever, and so it's even funnier that this movie. I want to get there right now. But so, like I said, you've probably seen this movie if you're listening to this, and if you haven't, we can get into how much we would or would not recommend this movie later. But
this will be a spoiler cast.
Oh yeah, so. And we're going to talk about the whole thing because you can't not talk about what happens in this movie and get to why people are freaking out about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially because you're dealing with, like I said, you have Chris Kyle, who is billed as the most deadly sniper in American history. Mm-hmm. He's a Navy SEAL sniper. They say his pinpoint accuracy saves countless lives on the battlefield, and it turns him basically into a living legend. But what happens, and what they kind of showed in some of the previews, that is, but when he's like home with his wife and his kids, he can't really leave that war that he's become a part of. And that to me was instantly intriguing because I really love having to wrestle with that. Wade, you were on last year when we talked about Fury, and I thought Fury really did a great job of trying to balance faith and war and atrocity and like kind of like what is idealistic and what is reality. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh man, we're going to get another film that basically does the same thing, right? It's going to try to walk this line. It's directed by Clint Eastwood. I think Clint Eastwood's been hit or miss to me. I prefer his older stuff. His recent stuff isn't my cup of tea, but you know, he's got Bradley Cooper on board. It's based on the book that Chris Kyle wrote himself. And outside of that, it doesn't have a lot of what I would call star power. It's mostly, you know, being carried on the back of Bradley Cooper and Clint Eastwood's direction. So, what I would start asking you guys, and like I said, Wade, you're further away, and you're from Texas, so you're the best. So you always get to go first. What drew you to the film in the first place? And what, you know, was it one thing? Was it, did you see previews for it?
Did you, because
lots of people didn't really even hear about this movie until it was nominated for Best Picture.
Well, okay, so for me, I was intrigued when Steven Spielberg was working on it. And it's so soon after Chris Kyle passed away. And so that really stood out to me. I wish we could have seen a Spielberg version of this film. And then I lost interest, and I wasn't too keen on it until I saw the very first trailer. And in terms of trailers, that first one where they show one of the opening scenes where there is a an Iraqi woman and a child, and they have the missile or whatever that is.
The grenade, yeah.
Yeah, and he's got to choose, and the soldier beside him is saying, you know, you make the wrong choice, and they're going to fry you. And so just that trailer was enough to make me interested. But I've seen a lot of movies these past couple months, and so I really wasn't planning on it. And then everyone started talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, like, let's do this. Like, I hate to be like on the out with a movie, right? So especially since I write about movies, if everybody's talking about, like, okay, well, like, I really want to see it so I can talk about it. So that's kind of what drew me to the story.
Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna say, and that sounds actually a lot of, because I thought I might let it pass me by.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, it's coming out. The trailer was very intriguing, but I'm like, am I watching a trailer that's giving me the only real conflict that I'm going to see in the movie? Is the rest of it just going to be fluff to get to this one scene? But then once the buzz started, I was like, I can't yeah, not engage this, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the podcast, but remember the time we went to see it. We went to see it Thursday night at like 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. or 10:15. So we saw it before it hit the weekend theaters. Mm-hmm. So there was no buzz when we decided we were going to go see it.
Well, there was already some. I mean, it had already been nominated.
Yeah.
No,
I mean,
it had already made it on Thursday night.
I don't know if it'd been it might. I guess it did. But it had been out in small cities. Like, it was out in Dallas and New York and L.A. beforehand. And I believe it made more money per screen. It set a record for the amount of money made per screen for the film. And so beforehand, there was some good amount of buzz that was still going as that opening weekend was rolling around.
Yeah, so we went to see it Thursday night of, the wide release opening weekend. I mean, just to set the benchmark of where we are now, it's at or over $250 million, and this has surpassed every other war film in American movie-making history. So this is now the most popular war film ever made. Surpassed Private Ryan. It surpassed every other war film that's been made.
Wow.
So I think it's hard to overstate the significance of what this movie has done and the chord that it's tapping into. For me, not having... So as soon as we came out of the theater, I was already advocating to do a podcast on this. I had a sense that it was touching something deep. But before I even saw the movie, a couple of things that intrigued me about it. I think a sniper is kind of like a lifeguard in some ways. Like when you're a kid and you go to the pool, you see that lifeguard sitting on the stand with the sunglasses on and the hat on backwards, twirling the whistle, and you think, oh man, that guy's cool. I want to be a lifeguard someday. I don't want to be a sniper someday, but I kind of put a sniper in that category. Oh, it's kind of secretive or cool or their marksmanship. Mm-hmm. So I think culturally, just saying the word sniper has kind of an allure about it, a secrecy or a undercover nature that intrigues people's interest. At least for me, that's true.
And it requires a good amount of skill. It's something you'll see in the film with Kyle. Mm-hmm. He gets the notoriety. And mm-hmm. I think people see that and see, okay, this is kind of like the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
It is not just a soldier on the ground, which I believe that requires a lot of skill. But I think some people will look and say, well, this is just like superstar in terms of the Navy or the Army.
Right. So that's a great point. It's already a cool profession culturally, and this guy's the best of the best. So now you've kind of got my interest without the movie even having any buzz, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The other things that attracted me to your question is I love Bradley Cooper's acting. I think he's an amazing actor. And then I do like Clint Eastwood. One other thought on the trailer. Y'all both mentioned the trailer. I think the trailer zoomed in on Bradley Cooper, Chris Kyle's face, in many ways foreshadows the movie. Like, the movie is zoomed in on Chris Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite a biopic, but it's about Chris Kyle. So those were all the things that drew me before I even went to see the movie.
So thanks to you guys bringing us some great stuff. I did look it up, and the nominations for the Academy Awards were announced on January 15th at like 8:30 in the morning Eastern time, and the American Sniper came out on the 16th.
Okay. So, Thursday night.
Yeah,
so
technically we saw it that night.
Yeah.
Wow. So I got up that morning. We had the Oscar reactions all day.
Are you from Texas, Fizz? Because you like, man, you just saw it right out the gate.
So that was the funny thing. We had the Oscar reaction that day.
Yeah.
That night, on Thursday, we had a church community group meeting.
Yeah.
And Elijah was leading the group, and at the end, he even joked. He's like, hey, well, I see a lot of movies, and I'll actually go see one tonight after the group if anyone wants to come. Mm-hmm. And Laura and I kind of looked at each other, and we're like, whatever. We only have to work tomorrow. Let's go. Because we were going to go. We typically go see movies on Saturday to try to save a couple bucks for matinees, but... You know, Elijah was going. We were like, it just got nominated for Best Picture this morning.
Wow.
Bradley Cooper got nominated for. So we went ahead and knocked it out. Let's see, what was all the fuss about?
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it started immediately. That day, I already started seeing some, I don't want to say, like, contentious might be a little strong. Because you didn't get some of the people really... throwing mud at Chris Kyle's character yet, because it hadn't quite hit that super box office numbers where people were having like their reaction to it. But you had some Hollywood figures really upset at the ideology presented in the film, the jingoism, you know. So some of those started, they hadn't penetrated yet. The fights hadn't started, but you had some kind of general opinions out there, and I saw some of those, because I remember thinking that it was really interesting to me that the Academy, which, I mean, most people see as a fairly, you know, Hollywood-driven, super liberal, you know, they always pick, like, oh, what's the joke? It's like, the best picture every year is going to be about gay cowboys eating pudding, you know, like it's... You know, it's not. It's always going to be some kind of really off the wall, super artsy thing. And for them to have nominated something that, for most, like, for all intents and purposes, is the opposite of what you would associate with the liberal Hollywood mindset or the way that Hollywood is painted, was pretty outstanding to me. And then it didn't take but two or three days that weekend. That massive. I think I wrote it down, that 103 million, maybe 100 and 105.3 million opening weekend.
Yeah, it's big.
Before, like I said, people were on one side or the other.
Yeah,
and so I was kind of glad that we had mm-hmm. Kind of spontaneously decided to go see it because I could start addressing because people. I'm assuming like you, Wade, like when you write about movies and people are like, oh, you're the guy that writes about movies, right? So they come up, have you seen this film?
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion about this film? And so people were asking me those questions and I'd be like, well, it's a great conversation. And then again, anytime I saw Elijah after that day, mm-hmm. he was like, hey, when are we doing it? When are we doing it? When are we doing it? So I mean, it was on the radar. This film was on the radar for me. To possibly do, just because I assume that if Bradley Cooper had attached himself to it, that there was a good Bradley Cooper and Clint Eastwood had attached themselves to it, that there was probably enough there that it was going to hit for people. I had no idea that it was going to hit this hard,
mm-hmm.
And like I said, once it did, there was not really a question. There's only a few types of movies that would be seen by this many people that we would not cover on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually because the reasons that they're being seen are fairly obvious. And I would point to, like, the two examples I usually give people are, like, Transformers, which I've still thought about doing because if a movie makes, like, $700, $800 million, we should probably have the discussion, why do people go see this movie, even though for universally acclaimed as garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a couple of weeks, I'll probably have to disappoint a lot of people by not doing a podcast on 50 Shades of Grey, because I don't necessarily think we need over an hour to talk about why people are going to go see that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's making $105.3 million in its first weekend, there's a good chance we're going to talk about it. So I'm glad we went to see it. I felt like we were accidentally ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I love, for someone who typically becomes comes off as fairly nonviolent pacifist most of the time, I love history, and so I love learning about history. Mm-hmm. And so I'm typically attracted to war movies.
Mm-hmm.
Just learning what people went through, the effects those things had and stuff. So it's kind of like Lone Survivor last year. I was like, I'm not a rah-rah military guy, but I love seeing what people do and can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can I ask a question about something you said? You said the mm-hmm. movie hit, and it hit hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I would consider that kind of this chord idea. It's hit a chord, and it's hit a chord hard. So throwing the question out to both of you all, what chord do you think this has hit, and why has it hit that chord?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. It is a film about a man who gained notoriety by killing. I think that's one. It is a film about a war that's very controversial, right? The Iraq War. And then on top of that, you have some celebrities and a good amount of individuals who commented on the film who hadn't actually seen it, or they they commented on Chris Kyle's character and they hadn't actually seen it. And I think it's important, and two, we'll have to kind of frame our discussion as well. Which Chris Kyle are we talking about? The Chris Kyle in American Sniper, the book, or the Chris Kyle in the American Sniper, the movie, or Chris Kyle, the historical figure? Because you have his version in the book, you have Eastwood, his version, and then you have the real Chris Kyle. And I think what a lot of people did is they look at the book version, and they denounce the movie based upon that. And whenever I watched this film, I went in, and I'm expecting that it is going to be this almost pro-war, pro-murder type film, and I didn't feel like it was. But I think people who had not seen the film reacted to the book or to what they heard from other people, and it turned into this huge snowball effect. And we'll get into that, but I think it's important to frame the discussion. And I think, too, Clint Eastwood, he made a big deal of himself. So, the media and everyone in general made a big deal of what he did at the Republican convention, the odd chair thing that whatever. And so you associate him kind of with right wing, almost pro-war people, but I don't think that's where he is. And so when you have that association, and I'm not trying to say, oh, the left's always on us or Democrats or, you know, anything like that, but you kind of associate him with maybe, okay, this stance, maybe it's pro-war, and then you have this book that's controversial, and then it's kind of leads to that. But I don't think – I mean, I don't think Eastwood's pro-war, but we'll get into that. But that's kind of, I guess, my answer to that question.
Well, and what I'd say to kind of take that baton and run further with it is that I see the movie itself, because I was really trying to be very careful how I describe the film to people, because the film itself I didn't really see as a pro-war film or necessarily anti-war film. But I was concerned that there was going to be two versions of how people took the film. And so there was what the film was actually saying, and then there's how people can use the film to champion their own ideas. And so I see people on one side, or I think the film's very polarizing because I see people on who would be more of that that pro-war, pro-military, that type of person being able to take things from this film and say, look, this was a hero. You have to understand there's evil in the world. We have to do this thing. And he was amazing. And there's people on the other side who are like, well, take some of these things that happen in the movie and realize that it's very one-sided. That's not telling the whole story. And so let's throw the whole film out. And so to me, there's part of that, there's this internal conflict. And I almost couldn't talk about the film when we walked out of the theater because on one hand, I was like, this film, I thought, was one of the best recent Clint Eastwood films that I've seen as far as what he did. And I definitely would agree that I don't think that, like, you know, like, it looks like he came and was trying to make a pro-war film. Or, you know, rah-rah Republicans, you know, God country. Like, it didn't look, that's not what I got from the film. But at the same time, I said, if people watch movies like most people watch movies, basically the antithesis or the reason that we have this show to begin with, because most people go and they don't really think about what they're watching. They take the simplest answer from the film, or they don't think too critically about it. I was like, I think that a lot of people are going to think that this was a positive, kill more people who are different from us. You're a hero for doing things like that. There's not a lot of consequences to it. I mean, sure, everyone has to, you know, everything has its price, you know, but glory is forever, and, you know, look at the admiration, and American lives are more valuable than other people's lives. And I felt like that message that it was going to send, and like I said, it was this this jingoism, like this hyper patriotic message that I thought was in direct conflict to my Christian beliefs was what a lot of people were going to take away from it. So I was like, man, good film versus ideology that I think is in conflict. How will people take this?
Well, I think this question is particularly interesting for you because, I mean, I knew from the time that we came out of the movie theater that you, I mean, that you were struggling with the film. Great, like you said, great movie, but I don't really like the message it's sending. And so I think it's fascinating for you to kind of try to put yourself in the shoes of, what, 25 million or however many people make up the $250 million box office number now, and like ask what are they seeing in it. So I'm intrigued by your response. Here's a couple of thoughts that I've had. So I think you're right in what you're saying, that there's killing, there's war, the bad PR from the celebrities that kind of created a little bit of buzz. And I don't think you're saying that's all that's creating it. So I want to just kind of make that explicit. I think I see those as sideshows. I think there's something much deeper going on. Those things didn't hurt the chord that it hit, but here's the things that I think are really motivating the chord from my perspective. And so one thing that I've read more times than I can keep track of now is an almost universal audience reaction of walking out in silence. So why does an audience see a film in a packed theater and then sit for the trailers and sit for the credits in most cases and then walk out in silence? Almost a reverent kind of silence is a reaction I've heard from reviewers across the country. And I think that's something about the man that they're seeing and really chewing on and reflecting on. They saw something in his character that was uncommon or rare. The other thing that Cord, I think it hit, interestingly, Taken 1 and Warrior both did this. They mixed bravery and heroics with the theme of family in a way. Like, if you think of most superheroes, most superheroes are motivated by saving the world or their own glory or whatever the particular, stopping the bad guy, what I would call a little bit more of a simplistic motivation. But movies like, again, referring to Taken, I remember Taken hitting a very deep chord, and I remember wrestling with why did this hit such a deep chord. And I think what it was is that he was a superhero of sorts. He was fighting, but what he was fighting for wasn't his own glory or wasn't his just to stop the bad guys. Like, he was fighting for his daughter. He wanted his daughter back. Warrior did the same thing, two brothers fighting for the survival of their family. And so I think this movie did that same thing, that Chris Kyle was fighting, but some of the most poignant scenes are the scenes that kind of mixed up this on the phone with your wife in the middle of a firefight and the phone drops on the ground and she's trying to figure out if you're dead or alive. Like, that was a very powerful mixing of heroics, bravery, and then family. And the final and third thing that I think this chord that I think this hit with people is what I would call moral clarity. I think we live in a time that is very confused about moral clarity, and I'm not commenting on whether the moral clarity of the film was correct or incorrect moral clarity, but I think there's no question that he had a very, very high dose of moral clarity in his character. And so I think that's rare today, and I think when people see it, it's like, oh my goodness, like, what is that? Like, what planet are you from that you can just say, no, I don't have any qualms about what I did. I stand by every shot that I took. And so I think that grabs people's attention. It can be presented as simplistic, but it's definitely bold. And I think the boldness of it, to that I would add that he had a courageousness, a sincerity, and a servant character about him. Being willing to come off the roof and go fight with the Marines, even though that wasn't his job. So I think all those things really captured people's hearts in a way that kind of took them by surprise, even the people who were seeing it.
Yeah. And too, them ending the film with the real footage of his funeral. So this is not just a character that died. You're resonating with a real man. And then, I thought that this was a little almost heavy-handed, but there's no music for the credits. And if there would have been some sort of music, it would not have been as quiet. People didn't feel as comfortable to that. Going back to what Fizz said, I think we have to draw. I think we have to make a distinction between art and should we disregard art because people on the polar ends of the spectrum misinterpret it. I think if you properly interpret this film and you really look at it, you might come away with saying, yeah, you know, that helps me to kind of understand why I'm anti-war, this or that. You're looking at the good mainstream, maybe not mainstream, but really quality critics that I trust. And some of them are liberal, some of them are conservative, anti-war, pro-war, and most of them have not walked away with this sense of like this film is dangerous. I think what we're getting at is these people on the far end of the spectrum misinterpreting their film and using it for their own biases. And we see that with everything. And that's why I'm quick not to throw this film away. One of the things that really is irksome to me is when people try to tear apart the Bible by bringing in those individuals at the far side of the spectrum who misinterpret it for their own means. Mm-hmm. And so I think in this particular context, we can't pull up, you know, these tweets from people who are like, "Oh, I want to go kill Iraqis now." I mean, those people are at the far end of the spectrum, and it didn't take them seeing this movie to have that type of attitude. We have to take it as a piece of art and interpret it on its own terms. And there will be people on both sides who misinterpret it. But looking at the film itself, I think that gives us a better picture of what Eastwood's trying to do and what this film is trying to do.
Well, see, that's where... Oh, man. I don't... Oh, gosh. I'm trying to be really nice about this.
No, let it all out, Mikey.
No, it's not contentious. It's just, I think that for most films that I would really agree with you, Wade, that you should, I feel like you can, when you want to get, like, what's the message of this film, you know, you cut off the high 10%, you cut off the low 10%, and you say, what's, you know, where is everyone going with this? Or what is everyone getting from this film? That's why, you know, like, every podcast we do is not 3 hours long, hitting on every single thing that everyone could have possibly gotten from any film. All right, but in this one, I don't feel like the middle is the biggest part. I don't feel like the 80% reaction is in agreement. I feel like to get the middle of the road, just looking at the film reaction, we have to cut out like the top 30% and the lower 30%, because it's creating this controversy, this argument between, like I said, between these extreme factions, because it is doing something, even though people who are I almost don't want to say it this way because it's almost like we're building ourselves up too much. But, you know, we do this all the time. You know, we have the story is powerful, entertainment's not mindless. Mm-hmm. When like the three of us go watch movies, we're used to watching movies looking for, you know, looking for things with our brains turned on, with like, what were they trying to say? What does the art say? What is the film actually saying between what does it make us feel? You know, what's the book that, you know, Chris Kyle wrote? How is that different from this film? How can we separate those two worlds? And the problem that I have is I'm not worried about Wade. I'm not worried about Wade tweeting, "American Sniper makes me want to go shoot some effing Arabs." Gun symbol, gun symbol, gun symbol. You know, I'm not worried about Wade doing that. I'm not worried about Elijah tweeting, "American Sniper made me appreciate soldiers 100 times more and hate Muslims 1 million times more." Because I feel like we, you know, like I said, we're going in and we're looking for those differences. We're looking for what's this movie trying to show. But my concern is, what is the average person just going in? And I feel like they're coming out and more people than normal are getting some type of extreme view, whether it's positive or negative from this film. And
you
I
know,
think
it's, that... It's hard for me to kind of grasp that And I do think that there are people who come out of the film and they're saying, you know, this and that. I mean, Facebook is kind of where I see the extremes of opinions, right? So there are people that I'll talk to, and because it's face-to-face, they're not as extreme. But when you get on Facebook, there's something about just, like, posting everything. And so I'm from Texas, and so a lot of my – most of my friends on Facebook – you know, super extra conservative, gun-toting Second mm-hmm. Amendment Texans are there, and I'm not getting anything like that. I get this, wow, like, he's a hero because he wanted to save lives. You know, I'm getting that, and I'm getting, wow, like, it shows us what our military families go through. So I'm getting that, but I haven't seen anything like, yeah, I'm so glad we went to Iraq, or, oh yeah, kill those terrorists. And so for me, I'm like, I feel like I'm like in the thick of it. Like, you know, I know, we know some redneck people, right? And I feel like I'm right there, and I'm hearing about other people, but I can't find them on my own. Like, I can't find these people that I know. Huh. And so it's hard for me to wrap my mind around that. And maybe you have friends that view this differently, but I guess for me, like, that's why it's so confusing to me, because I'm like, okay, these people that I normally disagree with extremely on politics, like, it, I don't get that vibe from them, and maybe I'm just not digging enough, but that I don't see that.
Yeah, and I've got several thoughts about that. So one, I think we've increasingly come to a place in society where everything has to be viewed through a political light, a political lens, and so I think that's one of the reasons things become viewed through that scenario so quickly, or become divided so quickly. So I think that's part of what's going on here. I don't think this was intended to be a political film, but I think a lot of people are trying to make it a political film. I also think, as you were saying, Wade, there tends to be a little bit of guilt by association. So if such and such tweet said this, then you must somehow be connected to that or responsible for that. And in that regard, I feel like there's quite a double standard in how a lot of people are viewing this film. So, I mean, there's tons of things that present violent images or bad images, or whether video games or movies or jingoistic attitudes towards people. But I rarely see the type of reaction that you see in a lot of reviewers and a lot of media commentary that I see to this film. So I think there's a double standard there, which makes me think there's something else going on, because these same people don't get upset about a lot of other similar themed movies. My last thought in that regard is a very tongue-in-cheek statement that I was thinking about in the car on the way over here. I think the real problem with the movie, from the media perspective that opposes it, is that the American people are sheep, and Clint Eastwood is kind of this wolf, and we need some sheep dogs to protect the American people from Clint Eastwood. So I say that tongue in cheek, but I feel like there's a little bit of a contradiction going on, in that people do feel like they need to protect the American people from this movie and kind of pick it apart a little bit, or find things outside of the movie to delegitimize it. And there's a protective instinct in that. That I don't think the people doing it even realize they're doing it, but they feel like they have to protect the American sheep from this movie.
So you're saying there's some kind of sheepdog?
Oh yeah, yes, there's some sheepdogception going on. Yeah.
And for the record, like I like this movie. It's not on my top 10 list.
Hold on, the record is showing that Wade Bearden likes this movie.
Yeah, so I like this movie. It's not on my top 10 list. There are number of problems in terms of the choices, production-wise, that Clint Eastwood makes. The end is kind of a mess. I mean, if you really think about it. So there are some issues that I have with the film. That's what the issues is. They're cinematic issues instead of thematic, I guess you could say. And so, you know, and I'm sure we'll get into that, and we'll talk about, you know, some of the particulars of the film. So I say that, like, this is not my favorite film of the year, but I guess I'm just kind of a little confused that it's causing this much stir.
This much ruckus?
Yeah, I agree.
All right, well, I will say to something that you mentioned earlier, Wade, that I have had people say in no uncertain terms, actually, I think in very specific words, like, if you love America, if you want to understand what it's like staying the best country in the world and what the cost of freedom truly is, then you are obligated to go see American Sniper because America, basically.
Yeah.
And if you don't love America, then you're probably not going to love this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the kind of things that I'm seeing from, like, family members, from people who, you know, tend to lean more towards the conservative side of the scale, you know, pro-military, shoot first, ask questions later. Mm-hmm. You know,
but I don't think that Muslims necessarily. I don't know if that necessarily implies that the film is pushing people. I think they misinterpret it, but I don't know if it's pushing people to want to go. Hey, let's go, man. Let's go back to Iraq. I feel like when I watch this movie, I'm like,
let's never go there again.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was not a good decision. What I walked away. Now, when you walked away from this film, like, and I guess to ask both of y'all, did you feel like, oh man, it would be fun to be a sniper, or it would be fun to go to Iraq? Like, I felt the complete opposite of all that.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I feel like we're kind of dancing around this question a little bit, which I think is a helpful way to put it is, what is flawed or unhealthy about Chris Kyle's character as portrayed in the movie? Because I feel like we're talking about two separate things. We're talking about the public reaction, which mm-hmm. isn't really the movie, and then there's the movie itself. And so I think it's helpful because I think Clint Eastwood actually does this more than the reviewers give him credit for. A lot of the reviews I read criticized Clint Eastwood for presenting Chris Kyle as too simplistic. The only mm-hmm. problem he really has is that he quote, loves America too much.
Sometimes he just cares too much, Elijah.
Which I think is actually unfair and not true to the movie. But I want to ask the question to you guys, particularly from a Christian perspective. I mean, this is real world theology. So what, I know you have wrestled with this a lot, Mikey, what is the problems or the unhealthy aspects of Chris Kyle's character as it's portrayed in the movie?
Mm. Well, and that's what I wanted to kind of talk about too, because regardless of the reaction, mm-hmm. there are things that he does mm-hmm. that I think are worth maybe not just accepting because he does them for seemingly noble reasons.
I think that's a great conversation. What are those things?
So one of the hardest things for me is to watch military families being torn apart
mm-hmm.
Because the things that Chris Kyle seems to be fighting for, you know, when asked, you know, God, country, family, when I see, or when I walked out of the theater, I said, where were God and country in that list? Like where were God and family in that list?
Mm-hmm.
I thought Chris Kyle's priority were country, country, country,
mm-hmm.
family, maybe, and sometimes God, if you ask him in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't see a man who was remorseful or wrestling with the concept mm-hmm. of taking human life.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it should be more complicated mm-hmm. than I'm willing to, you know, answer for every single life that I took.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there should be some hesitation.
Mm-hmm.
When we, as a Christian, I believe in evil,
mm-hmm.
but it's really hard for me to go around and saying something is 100% evil or something isn't, and to put ourselves in a position of judgment. And, you know, this is something that we had to wrestle with when we talked about Fury as well. You know, like where does war and Christianity meet? Mm-hmm. But I think more than that, because I didn't really expect them to explore that a ton in this film, and especially not as near as well as I thought it was explored in Fury. I was wondering where family was going to be on that scale, mm-hmm. and to me, I saw a father who misrepresented what it means to be a man to a son who is then indoctrinated to basically put his family second. And I think something that Elijah, you were chiding me on after the movie mm-hmm. was like, but he saved all those lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you think of it from, you take a step back and you say, well, him fighting for those freedoms, as quote unquote freedoms, from tyranny and stuff, isn't that really for his son? I'm like, well, when his son looks back, is his son going to be happier that his dad was able to save these people that he's never met, or is he going to be in counseling for 15 years because his dad was never there?
And that's the thing that I enjoy about this film, is it raises all those questions. You see the story in pretty almost entirely from Chris Kyle's perspective. And so you begin to question his motives. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene when I think it was right before he went to his last tour. He's lying in bed with his wife, and she basically says, like, you're going to have to choose. Like, are you going to choose us, or are you going to choose to go back? And then there's that sharp cut, and it's like, I think it's a Humvee, and it says, for Thor. And it's like this hit. It's like he's wrestling with this, and that's why I enjoyed kind of this character, short character development. The thing about Cooper that he did so well is he plays a man, and I know these people.
Yeah,
he plays a man who says one thing. He's almost got this kind of macho, tough exterior. Well, you know, I'll answer for every one of those kills, right? I'll do it. But with Eastwood and Cooper's acting, his performance, I feel like you have a man who's saying one thing but is wrestling internally with another, and he's too tough, quote unquote tough, in his own eyes to communicate that. And there are some really powerful scenes when, for one, I believe they're in a tire shop, and a man comes up and says, "You saved my life," and he's like, "Okay, yeah, yeah, you know. Are you all right, son?" Like he's wrestling with that internally, but he's not going to say it. You know, he's got this tough exterior, like, okay, all right, awesome, awesome. But there's this weight of trying to protect other men like him. There's this weight of I feel like I have to be over there, and almost this duty. And so that's why I really love the film, because you don't have this black and white, hey, everything Chris Kyle did was awesome. It's like there's this, you're wrestling with this character, and you're like, well, should he go back? Like, should he go and try to protect these troops or not? And so for me, that was a really powerful point in the film, is just his character and Cooper kind of bringing that to life.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the thing I appreciate about what Mikey's doing and saying, which is pretty countercultural at this point, because of the wave of interest in this movie, is I do think there are some things that are unhelpful, unhealthy about Chris Kyle's worldview, his approach to life. But before I highlight those, I want to disagree with the critic who said that the portrayal of Chris Kyle in this movie is overly simplistic, and the only thing he struggles with is that he loves his country too much. And I'm going to give several examples of that. You have a scene early in the movie where I would use two words to describe Chris Kyle as he's portrayed multiple times, that in some ways he's very naive, but at the same time he's very resilient. And the first scene that I see that in is when he's driving in the car with the truck with his brother. His brother's talking to him, telling him about his girlfriend, like, that girl's sleeping around on you. You don't know what's going on, man. You're just completely blind.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Kyle's like, no, she's not. Like, she's my girl. And then the very next scene, like, they walk into the room, and then there's his girlfriend sleeping with another guy. And he does whatever. He beats the guy up. In the very next scene after that, they're having beers together and laughing. So mm-hmm. like, he was naive, he was wrong, and then he was over it.
He's gonna keep on trucking.
He was gonna keep on trucking. So there was like, and then you see this come up. So in that case, naivety was an admirable trait. He believed the best about his girlfriend, and then he got over it when he found himself to be wrong. But then you see that coming out later in the movie multiple times, two examples of this naivety that doesn't settle so well. So the guy who died and his mom or somebody read the letter, the mm-hmm. Navy SEAL who died,
yeah.
And his mom reads the letter at the funeral, and Chris Kyle's comment as a character after that is, wasn't the war that killed him, it was that letter that killed him. So mm-hmm. it was kind of this, he didn't struggle, and he couldn't understand other people who struggled with, mm-hmm. with the war. And then probably the most interesting example of the naivety for me was when he saw his brother either coming or going, getting on an airplane. Mm-hmm. And he looked his brother in the eye, and he could tell there was something wrong with his brother. And he kind of looked at him and said, "What's wrong? Are you okay?" And there was some tenderness and some compassion there, but there was also some confusion there. Like, I don't recognize what's happened to you mm-hmm. because it hasn't happened to me, at least that I can see or admit. And it disturbed him a little bit that his own flesh and blood might be struggling with this more than he was. So I think there's this naivety that is on, in some cases, admirable, and then in some cases actually is keeps him from being compassionate to people who are struggling. Two final things real quick. I thought a huge turning point of the movie was when he's on top of the roof and he's under withering fire. He's just killed the sniper and the enemy sniper, and kind of all hell's breaking loose, and these little ants in the form of cars are just crawling all over this building, and he's on the phone with his wife and he's crying and screaming on the phone, "I'm ready to come home, baby. I'm ready to come home." It was like a breaking point for him. He was always ready to go. Mm-hmm. Now he's finally saying, "I'm ready to come home." The final thing that I think was unhealthy about his character was I think the most formative scene in the movie at the very beginning, kind of set the course for the whole movie, was the dad at the dinner table having the talk with the family and the boys. And there's three kind of people in this world. There's sheep, there's wolves, and there's sheepdogs. And I think that scene captured the worldview of Chris Kyle and the movie more mm-hmm. than any other scene. And so the obvious, well, maybe not so obvious, but the theological problems with that. Number one, it ignores sin within. So you've got a wolf inside of you, basically. God says to Cain, sin is crouching at the door and it desires to master you. It desires to have you, kind of this picture of a wolf or a lion, but you must master it. So there is this internal thing called sin that worldview doesn't really make allowance for. And then it also creates a little bit of a messianic complex, like mm-hmm. It's my job to save the world. And one of the most fascinating scenes to me was the scene where Chris Kyle, basically through a translator, gets this respected family in the city to be an informant on the butcher. And he promises protection to this family. Like, you just tell us the name, give us something to go on, and we're going to protect you. And one or two scenes later, they go to the place where they're trying to find the butcher, and the butcher is already there, and he's got this informant's son out in the middle of the town square. He's got a drill, and he's drilling a hole in the son's leg to torture the little boy in front of the whole family. And Chris Kyle is on a roof over watching everything unfold, and he's under enemy fire that's keeping him, like, he keeps on wanting to stick his head up and fight, but he can't, so he fails to do what he said he would do. He can't be the sheepdog to this informant and to his little boy. He has to just watch the dad be machine gunned down and the boy get a drill bit through his skull ultimately. Mm-hmm. And so he failed, his worldview fell apart right there, and you could see how much he struggled with that.
And I like how Eastwood challenges that worldview. You'll notice that when the dad is kind of giving his speech, which is a little over the top, he pulls that belt off and he slaps it on the table. He slaps the belt on the table, and then mm-hmm. we see the belt again mm-hmm. when Chris Kyle's out of the army and mm-hmm. he gets angry and he runs over and he's going to hit the dog.
Goes after the dog, yeah.
And there's this sense of, well, who is good and who's wrong? Who's right mm-hmm. or wrong?
That's
in this
good.
It challenges
That's
the
good.
Worldview. And you'll also notice it's told primarily through Kyle's perspective, but the enemy sniper, you'll notice that when he's at his home, and it's one of the scenes where you actually break away, and in the scene is the sniper, the enemy sniper's wife, and a little baby, and it's just about the time that Kyle has that baby. And so there's this idea of kind of almost, it's that fog at the end when they're running through the dust storm. Who are the good guys? Who are mm-hmm. the bad guys? And so Eastwood is smart.
Mm-hmm.
He makes it very nuanced, and that's one of the reasons why this makes so much money, is that someone who's anti-war can walk away and say, whoa, look at what he's trying to do. And then someone who's maybe, you know, maybe a little bit farther right than us can say, well, look at what our soldiers did. And so I think that Eastwood, he kind of puts that worldview out there, but he challenges it just kind of little by little.
Well, and what worried me and why I was so conflicted walking out was because I saw the challenges, and I felt like a critical look at some of those scenes that both you guys have just mentioned would show that this is destructive. Like, this life can be destructive, but you also have to wrestle with the concept of, is it necessary? And, you know, that's a great conversation to have, but I think the movie is just like saying, let's have that conversation. But people are taking it like, the conversation's over. didn't you see what happened? And I think the reason that people don't, or people are not engaging in the conversation and they're seeing it more as already over is because while I think Eastwood does a great job during the movie to show that that worldview that Chris, or that ideology that Chris Kyle has, is deadly and not always as black and white as he would like it. Because, you know, for most of the film, we get anyone over there who's a Muslim, you know, they're the ones who flew into the World Trade Center and they're all evil and this is something you got to do. Get it done, protect American lives. But then you do see that scene, you know, that brief scene where the sniper goes in front of the picture and you're like, wait, these are people too, just a reminder. Mm-hmm. So you do have things like that to balance it. But in the end, what you need is, for a struggle that deep, you need most of the film, or at least a good portion of the film, to focus on what's the resolution to that? Mm-hmm. What's the wrap up? What's the conflict that's not the, you know, the guns firing and the snipering.
I'm going to beg your question there. Why does there have to be resolution? Like, isn't that part of the brilliance of the movie that we're debating right now, that there doesn't seem to be enough resolution to satisfy some people?
Because I think the movie gives us a resolution that is too simple.
What do you think the resolution is the movie gives us?
So we have him struggling for, I mean, the majority of the film. Mm-hmm. And then he finally makes that phone call. I'm ready to come home. You mm-hmm. know, I want to come home now. And when he comes home, we get the one scene with the dog. And then he's basically sitting with the counselor. Mm-hmm. And the counselor's like, hey, there's people here you can save. And then, like, the next scene, like, he's all better because he's saving people.
And then
he's fine. He's made the adjustment back to you know, the real world. Mm-hmm. And he's not having any issues and everything's going to be great. And it's pictured like, my kids love me again. My wife is perfectly happy. I'm helping veterans. You know, I'm a legend. People look up to me. I've got something to give. And I'm perfectly healthy, which I think is a misrepresentation of where he probably was at.
And I think that the film needed more time at the end. It could mm-hmm. have taken off maybe that some of the scenes where he's hunting the sniper and gone more towards that. Mm-hmm. But I don't, like, when the doctor says, well, there are people you can help here, it's almost like he looks at Kyle and Kyle's like, no, I have no remorse. Right? I have zero remorse. And he knows that there's something deep down. But he feels like the best therapy is say, okay, well, why don't you help, you know, why don't we help these people? I've heard people talk about the end. The end for me, so he's in his house with his wife. There are a couple things that tell me that the end is not as clean cut as we like it to be. Mm-hmm. The first one is he has a gun and it's cocked and he's walking around the house pointing it at his family. Like, think about that.
That's good.
Like, that is... That says there, not everything is exactly okay.
Wait, I'm going to have to stop you for a second because that's my impression of what every person in Texas does. So I just assumed that was normal. I assumed that was like, hey, it's Tuesday in Texas.
Was it a real gun? Was it really?
I mean,
thought it was a play gun.
I thought it was real.
I thought it was a real gun. And the thing is, like, I think of Chris Kyle and him and guns, and that type of person is going to be like, hey, we have to respect guns. And mm-hmm. so there's like this sense that, okay, maybe everything's not okay. And then I think, you know, it's tragic what happened, but what killed Chris Kyle? Post-traumatic stress disorder. The war killed him. Mm-hmm. It was just a little bit later. And so you have that and you say, like, you're left saying, wow, like, let's really, for me anyway, let's take a long, hard look at the costs of war. Mm-hmm. Even after you get home. And so the end, there was a problem there, and they jumbled the ending, and we needed him to push it a little bit more. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's as clean cut as maybe we think that on the onset what it could be.
I would agree with that the movie could have done a little bit more at the end, but I feel like we're missing something here, and I feel like implicitly what we're saying is, you know, I would have struggled more and I wish he would have struggled more. But I think in reality, the portrayal at the end was actually true to his character throughout the movie, right? So he was the guy that was kind of, he was called legend. He was a hero because he seemed to just glide above the surface. Like, he was the guy that could storm the house even though he wasn't with the Marines, and he didn't get killed, and he'd take his helmet off and he'd sit down and have tea with these Iraqi families. So he was the guy that didn't struggle even though his brother struggled. So I feel like we're asking him to almost go out of character at the end. I feel like Clint Eastwood keeps him in character. He's sitting at the counselor's office or the psychiatrist's office. Is there anything wrong? Nope. So I think that's actually true to his character. Mm. And to your point about what killed him at the end, I think there's a great irony to that him being, let's just say that if on a scale of 1 to 100, he's the guy that's at 100 who doesn't struggle at all or appears to struggle minimally. And then there's this guy that's at a 1, like he's kind of flipped out from PTSD, who went to the same war that Chris Kyle went to. So it's like the guy at the 1 level kills the guy at the 100 level, which kind of shows that you're not immune from the effects of war, even if they don't affect you directly. So I think it was actually truer to his character that he struggled less than other people did.
And I will say this, like, we wish it didn't happen that way, right? Mm-hmm. Because this is based on a true story. But in terms of the film, you know, I think it really does pose a lot of those questions. And two, like you said, Elijah, that he carries it internally. Mm-hmm. And he is the ox that keeps going mm-hmm. no matter what.
Yeah.
And so we see that, but it is a tragic story. It is a tragic story.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I guess I was worried that at the end we were left with Chris Kyle's worldview being the one that we were supposed to look back on the film with, because in the end, I think the way the film ends with the PTSD or the soldier with PTSD killing him, I would want it to say, and I would want it to be louder, that kind of like what you guys are talking about, that you know, the war can affect you even if it doesn't affect you.
Mm-hmm.
What I saw was, well, there's, you know, the soldier that killed him was just a wolf. He was a bad person. Like, everyone's like, F that guy. Hmm. You know, you go to hell, you know, for killing a legend.
Right.
Like, no one was ever like, this dude has problems. Like, problems that normal people have. Yeah. I'm not happy that anyone has to die ever. Mm. And I wish Chris Kyle was still here. And I wish this guy wasn't, guy was not so jacked up by PTSD that he felt the need to do that to Chris and his friend. But,
well, in reality, I think that the way the movie ended actually scrambles the whole worldview, because in Chris Kyle's worldview, that was a sheepdog killing another sheepdog. So, like, what? Mm. So I don't think that, like, I don't think the movie presented him as a wolf. I mean, he was
even with that really, really bad cinematic, like,
I mean, yeah,
linger the, there. That
right.
was like,
I mean, the
he's
wife,
obviously a wolf.
Yeah, I mean, the wife is looking out the door, kind of doing a little bit of a double take as they're getting in the so there's some foreboding and some foreshadowing there with mm-hmm. Chris Kyle's wife looking out the door as they're getting in the truck together. But, I mean, like, everybody that Chris Kyle is trying to help after he's out of active duty is somebody who's kind of a fellow protector, a fellow, like, somebody he has camaraderie and respect for. So I think that, and I mean, even people in the military that I've talked to, there's not this, like, angry, like, blaming or vindictive reaction against the guy that killed Chris Kyle. There's, like, there's almost this sadness, but a kind of a knowingness, like, mm-hmm. yeah, that really can and does happen. Like, man, that was horrible, but that guy wasn't the enemy. He was just somebody who came under more, who broke under the pressure more than Chris Kyle did.
And I did like the nuance of Eastwood's film. And I think what can happen is if you go super pro-war or super anti-war, you automatically alienate the other side. And so I feel like with this film, it's going to push individuals who maybe are real gung-ho war, Iraq, that sort of thing. I think it'll push them to kind of reconsider their ideas about war. It's going to nudge them. Now, the people on the far right, it probably won't, but those people closer to the center, and then the people closer to the center on the other side, I think it'll push us to understand that maybe they don't agree with the war in Iraq, but that doesn't mean that our soldiers are bad people, necessarily bad people. And I think it'll push us to kind of understand the military and what it's like and the families, and that maybe, even though they don't agree, maybe they'll be pushed to see that, okay, Chris Kyle did something. He did a good thing. He tried to protect our soldiers. That's what he was going there for. He tried to protect them. And then, and even him going after the butcher, it's him wanting to hunt this terrible person. Mm-hmm. And so I think that him being very nuanced about it actually helps to kind of push people and to get people thinking.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think something else that's a pretty big underlying part of this discussion in the national debate right now that is a pretty complex topic is the whole just war theory thing. Is there such thing as a just war is the macro, but on the micro level, like, what are your responsibilities as a soldier if you're a Christian? And I mean, you're looking at most people are looking at the movie from the point of view of the protagonist. So, I mean, if I was Chris Kyle, would I have had the courage he did? Would I have been wrong to do what he did?
Mm-hmm. We had that conversation too. Like, is he under pressure? Like, does he have to, like, kill the kid? Can he,
right.
Can he stop the, you know, stop the child, like, yeah. by shooting him in the leg or something like that?
Right. So this, the whole, from a Christian perspective in particular, the whole just war theory as it relates to an individual soldier raises a lot of questions situationally as well mm-hmm. as morally and theologically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I liked what happened, you know, at the start of the film, the film in war, he shoots the young boy. Mm-hmm. And then later on towards mm-hmm. the end, he's faced with the same sort of decision. And mm-hmm. there's another boy who picks up a grenade mm-hmm. launcher. And you'll see him hesitate. And he mm-hmm. hesitates to the point to where the boy had time to pull the mm-hmm. trigger. Mm-hmm. And he hesitates, the boy ends up dropping it and runs away. And so mm-hmm. I think that also shows kind of the development of that character that mm-hmm. he was a lot quicker to do that earlier. And then as time passes, things mm-hmm. begin to change mentally and morally for him.
Yeah, I read a review earlier today that said this is Chris Kyle is a rare soldier portrayed in this movie who actually becomes more human the more he is in war, using your example that mm-hmm. he actually gets to the place where he's wishing that he doesn't have to shoot this boy, whereas he's not portrayed as a cold-blooded killer. But I think your point about the opening scene is hard to overestimate, that I think Clint Eastwood is majorly foreshadowing a morally complex movie when, I mean, he's talking on the intercom to his supervisor and it's very professional. Like, he's not saying, I can't wait to kill this guy. He's using the language, I've got this guy in my sights, and the guy in his ear saying, you're going to get fried if you call this one wrong. So, I mean, it's freighted with moral decision-making and complexity and weight. Just that opening scene, I think, sets the tone for the whole movie in a way that it's easy to overlook.
Yeah, and I think visually, too, they don't necessarily glamorize that kill. You know, it's not like he hits them and it goes in slow motion and it's raining or whatever. It's like he hits him and it's from his viewpoint and that's it. And that's what was interesting. They're not necessarily – I didn't feel like Eastwood was trying to glamorize that part of the job. He's just like – he's documenting it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what this film is. He documents this version of Chris Kyle.
And that's why I'm so glad that Clint Eastwood made this movie and not Steven Spielberg. Like, Clint Eastwood's filmmaking is a much more minimalistic type of filmmaking. To use your phrase, he's documenting, or he's just showing kind of what happened. And true, you're always going to select things that will portray things a certain way and cut out other things that, so you're always editing in the process. Yeah. But nonetheless, I feel like Clint Eastwood did a great service to this character by not trying to glamorize it or try to, and the music was used minimally in the film. So it was very kind of trimmed down. In fact, I read that why Steven Spielberg backed out was because he wanted to up the budget of the film. Mm-hmm. And the people who were making it said, no, we're not giving you that much money to make this film.
And so, we're never going to make that money back.
Yeah, exactly. And so they gave it to Clint Eastwood, who took the $60 million or whatever it cost to make it and made a trimmed down movie that is now making over $250 million.
That's what I hear about, you know, the fake baby in those scenes, is because What I read was one of the writers or producers, one of them said the first baby showed up with a fever, and then the second baby didn't show up.
Humans.
So Eastwood said, okay, grab the doll. Like, he's just gonna get it done. And I felt like the film was a little bit sloppy in that sense. But that's, you know, it's Clint Eastwood, right?
But Clint Eastwood's a sheepdog, and he's protecting the movie.
Well, I mean, you're joking, but I do think there is a synergy or a simpatico relationship going on between Clint Eastwood as a person and Chris Kyle as a person. And, you know, Clint Eastwood, not only in character, but I think in some ways in real life, is this kind of confident, independent-minded, tell it like it is, kind of laid back guy. And I think Chris Kyle, as a person, from what I know, is very much like that too. And so I think that there's almost a kind of an unspoken relationship, an unspoken understanding going on between Clint Eastwood and Chris Kyle as people, as individuals.
Hmm. Well, I hate to do this.
No, you don't.
But no. But we're like I said, we're getting about that time, and I don't want us to run too long. Even though, obviously, I think we pointed out that the chasm between what you can get from this film and what, the different ways that you can come away from this film are well worth talking about and do lend themselves to critical thinking. Mm-hmm. I want us to kind of start wrapping up, and we typically do that by starting with some of the moments of the film that kind of make us say, come on, or don't really sit right with us. And I think we've all pointed out that this film isn't perfect. Even if you really liked it, or, you know, you came away critically looking at it and realizing that it's deep, it's got more layers than lots of people are giving it credit for, there's still some things that aren't quite right. So Wade, what were some of the things that just kind of made you scratch your head and say, come on?
Yeah.
Come on, Clint.
Cinematically, I mean, I mentioned it just a second ago. It kind of this, I felt like it was a little sloppy at times. There's that final shot that Chris Kyle has where he hits his rival sniper. And for a second, it kind of changes visually what the film is doing. It shows the bullet kind of going slow motion. And that's against kind of all he's done before. And I felt like that was kind of, it was just sloppy. And then, of course, the end was just kind of sloppy, put together in a weird way. We mentioned that final scene where he's at his house. I felt like we could have done without some of that footage in Iraq and moved it towards the back end, and that would have served his purpose much better. So with Eastwood, it seems like there are portions of the film, and in a lot of his films actually, where it's like it just didn't marinate. It's just that he's just like, hey, let's go, let's get this done, mm-hmm. let's push through. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why they hired him, is because he came in and he got it done. Mm-hmm. Whereas Spielberg is one of those methodical guys who gets everything in line. You know, he chooses his projects, works on them for a long period of time, and so that was one of the things where I said, okay, like, yeah, you know, come on, like it could have been better.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, mine. An interesting thing we haven't focused on a whole lot is his wife Taya, and I think Clint Eastwood gives her a significant amount of face time in that relationship, the struggle of that relationship, as well as the joys of that relationship. I think Chris Kyle does struggle with her, but he can be very tender with her, kind of comforting her in her moments of despair. Even though he's not all 100% himself.
Mm-hmm.
But the come on moment would be towards the end of the film, kind of a little bit too dramatic of a shift between she's saying, I'm going to leave you, about the middle of the film, and then they're all smiles and, mm-hmm. and running around the house playing towards the end yeah. of the film. And and so it's a little bit of a quick transition there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that I think you're both hitting on things that kind of irked me a little bit, and most of them were filmmaking decisions. Mm-hmm. Because, well, besides the fact that I did think it was a little, like, telling the story completely from, well, 97% from Chris Kyle's ideology does or can easily leave someone with, like, a all Muslims are evil, all, you know, might as well kill them. If we take that and just push it to the side and we just look at the things outside of that that bothered me, it was mostly the filmmaking decisions. The bullet, like I said, we hadn't seen anything in the film to that point mm-hmm. that was filmed like that. And yeah. it just didn't feel right. The fact that there was that, I felt like I was watching a TV show there at the end when his wife looks out the door to the soldier with PTSD, and they give that, like, this is obviously that's what all they were missing, like the music cue. That's mm-hmm. all they were missing, like something bad gonna happen, you know, that like I was like, okay. And then for me, the entire, like, ending montage with the raw footage of, like, his funeral and his motorcade. It just, to me, it kind of worked, and it really didn't. Like, and I keep waffling on, like, does this remind us at the end that this was a real person? That's cool, but does this kind of say, or does this kind of defeat all those subtle messages that was put through the film? Because ultimately, it's just like, he was a legend. America, yes. And kind of glorifies that worship of this one person. And so, like, that kind of made me say, there's got to be a better way to do this. Mm. You know, like, there's got to be a better way to remind us that, hey, you know, these 2.5 hours or however long it was, like, this was a real person. But not in a way that, like I said, was self-defeating from making people realize there's a lot more going on than, like, the legend. This is his biopic. So it, like I said, didn't settle with me, but I hesitate sometimes to mention it, because I usually, if I'm going to criticize something, I want to have a better option.
Yeah,
not just criticism, but criticism right. and suggestion. And I don't know what they could have done differently.
Hmm.
So with that said, and me coughing everywhere, we go positive. You know, Wade, as I check the record here,
okay.
you like this film.
Yeah.
The record says that you like this film.
You are so observant. Like, I feel like it was being nuanced like Eastwood. Yeah, so I like the film. I mean, I've hit on a lot of things that I liked about it. Kind of just that portrayal of PTSD and the weight of the war on Kyle. I've talked about Cooper. He does a phenomenal job with his Texas dialect, just with the way he carries himself. And he's, man, he's huge. Like, he didn't concentrate on like getting a six pack or ripped. He just got huge, and so he has this great physical presence. And it's like, I mean, I don't know Chris Kyle, but if I had to picture Chris Kyle, it would be, you know, it would be that. So I like that. I really did. I don't think we talked much about this, but that last firefight, where he finally kills that rival sniper and they're all coming, and visually there's just this incredible looking sandstorm. And it's kind of a metaphor in a sense where who is good, who is bad. And that was a great, I feel like, visually, in terms, and also in terms of just being an intense sequence, did a very good, and the war sequences are very strong here with with Eastwood. And like you had mentioned, Elijah, that feeling of helplessness when you have the butcher killing the young boy earlier in the film, and he's you expect him to hop up like a superhero and make this miraculous shot, and he can't do it. And and those scenes really were powerful, and they were very well done. So that's among the other things that I liked about the film. Those were some things that I found very positive.
I'm so fascinated with this movie on multiple levels. I'm fascinated with the brotherhood that they create among the SEALs. You get the sense that when a SEAL dies, it's extra weighty. There's the guy that gets shot by the enemy sniper on the roof, and they end up kind of going out for revenge. We gotta get revenge for our brother. I feel like Chris Kyle and Clint Eastwood are reintroducing something old into the modern cultural conversation that has been forgotten or lost or downplayed for a long time. I almost feel like this is kind of a modern John Wayne. I mean, just if you think of how popular John Wayne used to be, and how there's not many John Waynes out there anymore, but this felt like John Wayne almost reincarnated for millennials. I think one reviewer put it that way, that this is for millennials what some old war hero movies were for previous generations. And I think that's part of what makes this so captivating and shocking. Not only is it well done as a movie, I think, but it's introducing these themes that we just don't talk about anymore, that don't get popular face time. Favorite scene briefly would be on the roof, seeing the enemy sniper and identifying him. He's faced the wrong way, so he turns around, he finds the enemy sniper, and his sergeant or whoever it is that's on the roof there with him is yelling, "Don't take the shot, don't take," like they're waiting on the backup and the reinforcements to come. And Chris Kyle can't help himself and can't avoid this opportunity to take out the man who killed one of his brothers in arms, and he takes the shot. And then Chris Kyle and the other guy, who's also a Navy SEAL and has been with him for the whole time, they just have this moment of celebration. Like, they know all hell's about to break loose. But they cut loose and they celebrate. And they finally accomplish their mission. And then they almost die. So it's just this moment of they're in the face of death. They disobey the guy who's telling them don't take the shot. And they get to celebrate. And then, thankfully, they get out alive. But that was a very powerful scene of just his sense of mission and duty in the face of death.
Well, I think I would echo probably what Wade mentioned earlier, that I think all the battle scenes, all the military pieces of this film were very strong, very intense, very uncompromising, without being they didn't indulge, I think. I think that, you know, that you could just have like ridiculous like blood everywhere and stuff. So they weren't indulgent, and I think that it showed war for kind of what it was. Especially that whole sandstorm battle, I just thought was filmed in a great way to show the chaos and the confusion of war. And it was one of the things where I thought Clint Eastwood's his style really like kind of shined through. Outside of that, it was actually something that my wife pointed out, I think a day or two later when we were talking about the film, and she said, because we have friends who have, you know, served in the military, and I've seen the same thing happen. I didn't even realize that this is kind of similar, but like he, like Elijah said earlier, he was like nothing was stopping him. He was always going and going. He was, you know, his girlfriend cheated on him, but whatever. He's drinking beers in the next scene. You know, life's not going to get him down. But over his four tours, so he starts kind of like he smiles a lot. He's generally, you know, happy-go-lucky, really, you know, gung-ho about what he's doing. You know, he comes back from a tour, and now he's wearing a hat. And the second tour, he comes back and is, you know, he's wearing a hat, but it's kind of pulled down over his eyes a little bit. Mm-hmm. And next time he comes back, he's got glasses on and his hat's pulled down. Like, he's constantly retreating, and there's this, like, there's this visual representation of him, you know, retreating and retreating and retreating and losing pieces of himself. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was interesting to see because, like I said, that like most of my friends who have been in the military, they all come back with that same look. They all have like the hat with the, you know, the glasses on and the beard. Like they all look exactly like that. And people that I've known who were incredibly jovial, like the things that they see and do, like it affects them, and you know, they're more reserved, they're quiet, they stand there with their glasses on, their hat pulled down over their eyes, and they're drinking the beer in the corner, just being quiet and like just looking at people do life. And I think that's one of the subtle things that this film gets right, and I haven't read the book, so I don't know if he describes like himself in any kind of way like this, or you know, that evolution, or maybe there's just pictures and someone noticed it and they, you know, adjusted his wardrobe and it was never intentional, but I could feel that transition of who he was because of that. And I feel like it was just a touch. But it really added a lot of depth to it. And like I said, maybe that's one of the ways that I couldn't say before of how you reminded that this was a real person. This isn't just like a fictional movie about, you know, someone who didn't exist. It's not like Tom Berenger and Sniper. Great movie, you know, but this is something that actually happened. So well, I wanted to give you guys a chance to you know, final thoughts, anything we may have missed out on. I'm very impressed that we got through this entire podcast without using the phrase Call of Duty culture. Because everyone in Call of Duty is a sniper. You know, Wade, I mean, like I said, you can use this for recommendations, anything we missed, but just your final thoughts on American Sniper.
Yeah, you know, I one of the things, I haven't read his book, I mentioned that, and I've read part of his book, just sections, and some of the things did come across as a little, something that made me a little worried, just kind of his, almost seemed like maybe he enjoyed it too much, and that's been talked about a lot. One of the things I noticed that is that the book was published within 3 years of him leaving. And I think it's very easy for us to look at someone like him and kind of turn him into a demon. And it's hard because I look back and we're here and we haven't been to war and we didn't see what he saw and we didn't experience the trauma or the, you know, PTSD that he might have experienced. And so I would just encourage people that when they talk about maybe Kyle or other people to kind of offer that grace. And as we work with our veterans who come back and, you know, they're not well, to offer that grace. And it's sad because we'll never know where Chris Kyle would have been in 10 years. You know, how would he have viewed what he did? Or 20 years, how would he have viewed what he did? What we can quote from is a book that was written, within a couple years of him leaving. And so I would encourage people when we talk about this, just to offer grace. Don't be afraid to say, well, that ideology is wrong or that's misguided. Don't be afraid of that at all. But to remember to offer grace, especially to those people that we meet and those people in our lives. And we pray that over time, if people have misguided ideology or theology, whatever it is, that God would change their heart. And so I think that's a big thing that has to come into this conversation when we deal with this. It's kind of easy to paint people in a negative light. And it's certainly there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, that was misguided or that's wrong. But it's also important to offer that grace. And I hope that this movie will help us to treat our soldiers better. I hope it'll push us to question our wars and not be so quick to jump into a war. And I have hopes that maybe this film could be something like that.
That's good.
I'm going to take a little bit more of a spiritual geopolitical tack on this. I read a fascinating story several months ago that shortly before George W. Bush declared or began the Iraq War, I guess that was 2003, the Vatican sent an emissary to the White House, a high-level emissary to the White House, and basically pled with George W. Bush not to instigate the war, to start the war that everybody knew was getting ready to start. And the Vatican's reasoning was that you're going to decimate the Christian population in Iraq because you're going to stir up some very old things that have been kind of calmed down or tamed in terms of old hatreds and old you're going to upset the social fabric that Christians have learned how to survive in Iraq. And this article was saying that pretty much everything this Vatican official representing the Pope, I'm guessing, said came true. That if you look at the Christian population today in Iraq, they've either fled or they've been killed for the most part. They're a tiny sliver of what they used to be. Wow. So the argument is that the Christians had it much better under Saddam Hussein because there was at least this equilibrium, this understanding, this semi-acceptance that it's okay for you to be here. That is no longer the case in many, many parts of Iraq today. So this war on a macro level has been one of the worst things that could ever have happened for the Christians and the church of Iraq. So having made that macro point and then zooming back in on the film now, I would just highlight that given those macro problems, I think Chris Kyle is somebody who stood up remarkably well and remarkably strongly under very difficult circumstances that were much bigger than him. So I think that's part of the fascination of this is there was great horror and many mistakes and many problems and unimaginable circumstances, but how did this man kind of withstand and lead and somehow survive, at least until he came home under those difficult circumstances?
Hmm. Yeah, it's good.
Well, so the film in general, like I said, I thought was a solid film, but it's, man, just the discussions, just the things that it has done to our culture in 3 weeks, the divisiveness, it's actually striking that chord, and I think it's well worth consideration, and I'm glad that we've had a chance to talk about it, and I'm glad that I feel like we've had a pretty fruitful and productive conversation about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I would say is that wherever you I guess, lean politically, or however, I guess you lean theologically when it comes to things like war, or, you know, violence and things like that. I just hope that you don't go see this movie and take it lightly. Because I would encourage people to see the movie, but only if you're going to take it as serious as the movie tries to take itself at times. Because I don't think the things that this movie deals with, we're talking about, you know, PTSD, the effects of war, the jingoism, hyper patriotism, fathers and sons and family relations, like none of those things are things that I think we should walk into a theater, hear a story, and walk out and not give thought and time to. So with that caveat, you know, I think that it's good to see movies that make us think. I hope people are taking the time to do it. So, mm-hmm. You know, especially when we see, like I said, Call of Duty culture, you know, people glorifying war and not having any repercussions from it. I think this movie starts that conversation. I don't think it ends it, and I don't think it furthers it incredibly well, but I think it makes us at least have it. So, definitely time well spent. Speaking of time well spent, following Wade Bearden on the internet is always time well spent.
You guys are great.
So, Wade, how can people do that?
Oh, man. Well, hey, first, thanks, Fizz, for allowing me to be on here. I appreciate it. After I told you I was too busy. But you convinced me. Now, you can follow me at wadebearden.com. I post about God, life, and the arts. And so that's a good place. Also, my Twitter handle is Wade Hance. Hance, Wade Hance. And so, yeah, I talk about movies. I write for Christ and Pop Culture, some other places. And I actually have a really cool thing coming up that involves talking about film and television. And I can't announce it yet because I don't know when this will go up. But follow me on Twitter and on my website. And I think if you like this show, I think you'll be interested in that. And so so we're excited about that. But yeah, so follow me there. And then same thing for Letterboxd. If y'all do Letterboxd, I love Letterboxd. Mm-hmm. That's how I keep up with Fizz and on his movies and reviews. And so same thing, Letterboxd.com/WadeHance.
Cool.
Elijah Lovejoy, you can find me at Church of the Redeemer. I'm the executive/assistant pastor at Church of the Redeemer here in Greensboro, North Carolina. We've got a website. You could look me up on there and listen to some sermons if you want to listen to some sermons. That's redeemergso.org is the church website. And don't have Twitter yet.
Actually, you have too much Twitter, right?
I have too much Twittering going on in my leg, so I just didn't know. But I really enjoy being on here. Thanks again for having me, Mikey. And always enjoy talking about thoughtful things.
Yep. Two great guests. I highly encourage you to check them out in any way. Contact them. Get up with them. Wade and Elijah love talking film. And so if you've enjoyed anything they have to say, like I said, pursue them. I'm sure they want to keep the conversation going. Mm-hmm. You can follow me at Fizzification on Twitter. You can follow Real World Theology on Twitter at Real World Theo. If you'd like to know more about Real World Theology, then, you know, peruse our site. We're going through a kind of reconstruction right now as this podcast is being recorded. Hopefully it won't look too under construction for too much longer, but you can find that at realworldtheology.com. That's R-E-E-L worldtheology.com. All of our show notes, all the ways to get a hold of these guys, all the posts, reviews, and stuff we do is all there. So check that out. Check us out on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you do enjoy it, please review the show. Giving us 5-star reviews only helps us find more cool people and more people to find the show, keep the conversations going, and it's really awesome. So it's always great to have awesome guests here. So thank you guys so much for being here. Thank you, listeners, for taking time to make us part of your week and staying with us, probably particularly long episode of the show. And yeah. Until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye. This podcast is a member of the Crossover Nexus. To find out more or to hear about other podcasts that engage faith and pop culture, please go to www.crossovernexus.com.
Part of me wonders if it's not a product of me writing well, I'm just going on and on and on, and maybe I need to just cut back.
So we shouldn't be as impressed as we are, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because, okay, like, you know those people that you talk to and they just will not shut up? That might be my essay.
That's you in writing. Okay, I've got you.
I'm sitting right here waiting.
That could be.
You know,
that could be. No, you're a podcaster. You can get away with that.
Yeah, it's your job to talk and not shut up. Okay?
Oh, man. Don't try to backtrack now. You guys are already here.